Last week, our Wyoming Catholic College seniors overcame whatever fears they may have had, and no, they didn't rappel off a 200-foot cliff. They didn't ice climb a 200-foot frozen waterfall. Last week, each one stood up and gave his or her senior oration. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. In order to graduate from Wyoming Catholic College, each student writes a thesis during the fall semester of senior year, and then in the winter presents the topic of the thesis as a 30-minute lecture, taking questions from the audience for another 30 minutes. That audience includes their classmates and other students, parents who arrive for the week or who are here via Skype or FaceTime, and oh yes, there's a panel of three faculty members armed with the first round of questions. This week and next, the After Dinner Scholar will feature two of our seniors fresh from their orations. This week's guest is Jason Kirstein, who wrote his senior thesis on The Four Causes of Obedience, a love that trieth the path to the terum visionis, that is, the land of vision. Jason, obedience is something most people don't want to think a whole lot about. It's kind of countercultural. I mean, it goes with words like duty, which smell bad to so many people.
Yeah.
We'd rather give orders than take orders. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose what is probably rather an unpopular topic?
Well, obedience is certainly an unpopular topic. I think that the mere word obedience is enough to cause a visceral reaction. I suppose that obedience is countercultural in the sense that there's prevailing philosophies that actually encourage one to believe that one's freedom is the right to behave in any manner, to act upon any desire without qualification. I think simply that's just whatever my desire is or whatever I will, that is my right to act upon it.
Disobedience is a sign of courage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this mindset mimics Nietzsche's Übermensch, which that creates an irreconcilable dichotomy between obedience and the notions of, self-autonomy or self-governance. I think we're tempted to put our own ego or, using finger quotes here, self-importance on a pedestal and look down upon our noses as if we're the arbiter of truth itself. And we refuse to obey anything that's outside of ourselves. And the result is that we end up having a disgust for order. We hate the hierarchy. It leads to a diabolical attitude of non servium.
You started your thesis with definitions. What is obedience? Seems like that's fairly simple to say, but it's more complicated than that.
I think in some sense, yes, and another, no. I think generally many do interpret obedience as just doing what you're told. I think this is an act of submission that is maybe of the notion of just mere compliance. But obedience, I have to argue that it's a moral virtue that inclines the will to hearken to and acquiesce to the will of another who has the right to command. And to expound on this definition that I was using, I had to describe obedience as a moral virtue, which is, as Aristotle says, it's determined by reason. It's a free act of the will. It's an act of submission to the proper authority's command or precept. But to do so, one needs to actually have reverence to be considered virtuous.
Now, you use the categories of causation from Aristotle to explain obedience more fully. Well, let's start with, what are Aristotle's four causes? And, you know, give us an illustration, a statue, a car, or something.
Sure. I think one of the reasons why I wanted to use the causes, and I think that too often we fail to grasp at a deeper meaning of the words that we use. It seems that we're satisfied with a quick Google search, and instantaneously we know the particular concept in its entirety. So I think just looking at how we use words and meaning, I think that just the depth is lacking. So Aristotle reminds us that we cannot have a deeper knowledge of something until we have grasped at the why, that is to say, the explanation or cause. And so I set out to find the deeper meaning of obedience using the four fundamental types of Aristotelian causation, that is the formal, the efficient, the material, and final causes. The formal cause, that's simply that just the species and the pattern. This is the account of what it was meant to be. Now I'm going to the fission cause. This is when Sid first had its beginning or change of rest, just meaning, let's say, a father begetting the child. He's the efficient cause of the child. The material cause, that is from which something is present, something comes to be, like the material of, let's say, the bronze of in a statue. And for the final cause, that's just the end, or for the sake of which, as I think Aristotle gives the definition, or he uses the example of as health is walking, or health is for the sake of walking. So you walk for the sake of health.
So you mentioned a bronze statue. The formal cause is the plan to make a statue in a certain way.
Sure.
The efficient cause is the artist.
Mm-hmm.
The material cause is the bronze.
Correct.
And the final cause is we're going to put it up in this corner of our house to
sure.
make it look pretty.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Now, how does that apply to obedience?
Well, obedience, yeah, it has actually a twofold causal relationship of wills. So I went from going from one's will to another's will, and I tried to, in order to give a full explanation of the definition that I was using, I kind of fit some of the causes into that definition. So for the formal cause, I just said that obedience is simply a moral virtue. That it's, I used Aristotle's definition, that it's a state involving a rational choice. It's a mean relative to us, determined by reason, with a reference to how a practically wise person would determine it. And so really I highlighted two things of that obedience is a moral virtue that is determined by reason, and that it was a mean between extremes, and reason was necessary to determine the means and the extremes. So I concluded that in this type of cause, or in the formal cause, that obedience wasn't blind to reason. As it pertained to the efficient cause, it said that St. Thomas says that the subject of all the moral virtues is the appetitive part of the soul, meaning the appetite. So I said where it begins to the first beginning to change to rest in one's will, well, that has to be contained in their own will. So I argued that the efficient cause was in one's will. But the material cause, since we have the twofold causal relationship of one's will and another's will, this simply means that one needs a command in order to obey. So one needs to be, has a capacity to obey, but needs to hear the command from the other's will in order to obey it. So I argued that that was the material cause in relation to another's will. That's the command of the authority, the precept, or the law. And the final cause, simply, I used again St. Thomas once again. He says that the law of divine love is the standard for all human actions. And since obedience is a human action, I just argued that that's the standard. The standard for obedience is love. That's the ultimate goal.
You talk about God's precepts, God's law. Where does that fit in?
I use that for the material cause. I made a chain of causation in which ultimately it's ordered from the divine law. There is no higher command than God's commands. There's no higher authority than God's authority. And so I had to argue, well, I just said that is the most universal precept, most universal command that one will always be obliged to obey.
Now, I was interested that you, following St. Thomas, talk not only about reasons to obey, but reasons to disobey, reasons not to obey. When is it the right moral choice to refuse to obey?
Yeah, this is also interesting. Not only is it morally permissible, but sometimes we actually have the moral obligation to not submit to the immediate command. And as we just said, that the highest and most universal commands is that which God is to be obeyed in all things. So if a superior would give an inferior a command which is not in accordance with divine law, which is not in accordance with the divine will, therefore one has the obligation actually to not follow that particular command. There's two senses in which we can think of that. One is that the superior, if he would give a command for his inferior to sin, then he's morally obliged not to obey. The other, it has to fall in the realm of what St. Thomas calls the sphere of authority. this limits, well, the sphere of authority is simply just a mode of, it's a mode of life which denotes a specific position of authority or the right or justification to exercise one's power. For example, parents have the authority over children, over their children according to their sphere or their mode of life called parenthood, which is rooted in the divine law of the fourth commandment. But even parents are limited in their mode of how to exercise their authority. Parents can't force their child to marry or not to marry. Parents can't force their child to be in a state of virginity or to not be in a state of virginity. And also St. Thomas says parents can't force one to be in to go into religious life or not to go into religious life, which I think he has a he's a perfect example of that, because his family actually locked him in a tower for a year in order to not join the Dominican order. Luckily, he persisted, and we have the angelic doctor.
Yeah. Well, and your boss shouldn't be telling you how to run your marriage, and your and parents of a five-year-old can. I watch my son. He's the parent of a five-year-old, and he tells him how much to eat and what to eat and when he can leave the table. I used to do that a long time ago, but I don't do that with my son anymore. It's inappropriate.
Yeah, you know, I give in my oration, I gave in the example of a soldier. A soldier ought to obey his commander as it relates to the military. But if I said if his wife would give him the same command as his commander, let's say to go take out a bunker, he's not obliged to obey that command. Although I did give a caveat, I've seen soldiers move faster at the command of their wives than their commander.
Your paper, while very philosophical, begins and ends with narratives. You very effectively begin the story with Abraham's sacrifice or near sacrifice of Isaac because of God's command, and you end the story with John Milton's vision from Paradise Lost of war in heaven between the angels who are faithful to God and the angels who rebel. Why frame this very philosophical work in two narratives?
Well, I think of the first, I didn't want to bore my thesis advisors when they were reading it.
Perfectly good thing.
I think I was attempting to present and actually practice a dialectical form of the of rhetoric. The reason is this: it seems that we live in a post-philosophical era where men are no longer able to endure sound reasoning or truth. But I think that through narratives such as, you know, story, as I wrote about, and poetry, it'll help put more vivid images into people's minds, where they'll start to question, where they'll start to want to seek the truth, will make it more palatable in a sense. So it's taking the philosophical edifice of sound reasoning and painting a more beautiful portrait so that they can perhaps look at it, be more attractive, and have a greater desire and a greater pursuit of the truth.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Tonkowicz.
In his thesis, Jason Kirstein notes, "Undoubtedly, St. Benedict calls every Christian soul to fight under the banner of the true King, the banner that flies steadily in the heavenly breeze, the banner woven of sapphire, royal purple, and scarlet yarns, embroidered with the words, 'Quis ut Deus,' who is like God, the banner the great Saint Benedict calls the bonum obedientiae, the good of obedience." If you have or know students who are on the other end of college, that is, looking for the right school, Wyoming Catholic College is still taking applications for next year's freshman class, and in addition, rising juniors and seniors in high school may want to try out a Wyoming Catholic College education with our 2-week-long summer program, PEAK. For information about applying to the college or to PEAK, visit wyomingcatholic.org. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.